way in the Ad Council.
Welcome back to this special edition of the Daily Drum. I vote, we vote, no vote. I'm Harold Fisher. In this segment, we're going to talk about getting beyond the political rhetoric. How do you decipher from what's real and what's simply a campaign slogan? A recent report published in the Washington Post found that for millennials, the presidential race almost feels like a joke, a reality show, a sitcom, some would argue. And certainly, you would agree that there have been more antics in this race than most in recent history. But what are millennials really saying and feeling? Of course, my next guests are on the front lines. We have Nikedra. We have Nikedra Robinson. She is the founder of and CEO of Black Girls Vote, also staying with us for this conversation. We also have Chris Prudhomme, of course, with your organization. Pardon my script. I dropped
my problem. Vote America Now.
Vote America Now. Thank you so much. I appreciate that. Okay, so Nikedra, here's the deal. How do millennials sift through the rhetoric when you aren't sure, even with the fact checking, if the facts are right? How do you know?
Mm-hmm. And what we find, thank you so much for having us, is that
sure,
when you talk to the millennials, you have to meet them where they are. You know, some of them didn't grow up around politics.
Mm-hmm.
They aren't necessarily passionate about politics, but they are understanding that they have power. And that power is the power of mobilizing and organizing and coming together and saying, hey, this is what we want as a millennial generation. And you have to excite them, you have to ignite them and get them motivated to get to the polls. And that's what we're doing with Black Girls Vote.
Okay, but we've got all kinds of slogans. Like I said before, we've got Let's Make America Great Again. When they go low, we go high. You know, better together. You know, how do you get to the brass tacks?
So you have to give people something to vote for versus voting against. And what we find is that we don't want, in 2008 and 2012, we voted for President Obama. And what we're finding now is that you don't want to go to the polls voting against someone. And so right now, with Black Girls, what we're saying, let's put together an agenda and saying, hey, these are the things that we're asking for as African-American women, and saying, hey, this is what we want and how can you deliver that? Because right now, in this election, as we hear, is so important, but there are certain things that we have to go to the polls with a message and saying, hey, as Black women, we delivered the presidency in 2008 and in 2012. So you need us this election. So what are you committing to for African-American women? And what we found with our millennials that we have across college campuses now is that motivates them, and that's what's getting them to the polls and will get them to the polls.
Same question for you, Mr. Prudhomme. I wonder, how do you siphon through the mess, the rhetoric, how do you dispose of the emotions and deal with, you know, the intellectual issues that will bring it home for your constituency?
Well, according to Politico today, 85% of millennials look at politics and issues on social media. I think social media is a very, very important fact. 85% of them look at information on there. And that's what we've been working to do is enhance that and do our town halls through there, as opposed to doing it on linear TV, doing it on social media. I just think that millennials look at the process completely different. And you're absolutely right. Excuse me. It is a slogan, and they know it's a gimmick. They know exactly whatever it be, Trump or whether it be Secretary Clinton. They look at it and say, come on, you know, and I think that's why it was so much enthusiasm around Bernie, because he said things that they could relate to. He said real edgy things and did not care about the politically correct, I guess you could say, statements. He just said what he said. And I think that's a really big issue to millennials. And frankly, I just don't think that they have the same they don't have the same enthusiasm as they did for Bernie. And then you have other issues, for example, like criminal justice reform. The system is completely flawed, and we have police brutality. These are issues that are important to millennials. Why was it not? I've received several messages and calls about why wasn't that brought up in the debate? No, it's in St. Louis, right Ferguson's right,
yeah,
there.
Right down the street, right, from Ferguson, and that's something we did talk about. I want to talk about that a little bit more, but I need to go back to the phone lines. A lot of folks on the line, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Mickey calling from Southeast D.C. What's on your mind?
Yeah, I just wanted to say for all of those young, old, whoever, people out there that don't vote, if you don't vote, whoever gets to be president, whatever laws they pass, whatever they say do, if you got to start standing on one leg and scratching your head, you got to do it. I don't want to hear nothing out of your mouth. In the history of the United States of America, the Republican Party for always has been for white folk and people with money. Democrats have always looked out for minorities and black people. So y'all remember that. The reason you got what you got now is because your fathers and your grandfathers and them voted for the Democrats. So you can have what you have now. That's all I got to say.
Thank you so much, Ms. Robinson. You're shaking your head. Go ahead.
Well, no, I think that when we look at it, we have to look at when Lyndon B. Johnson, a lot of African-Americans were in the Republican Party. But when Lyndon B. Johnson said, hey, fighting for Civil Rights Act for African-Americans, a lot of us switched to the Democratic Party. And so we look at that as far as it's not about the parties. And that's what we have to have the conversation about. It's not about the party. It's about the policy and who's committed to the policies for African-American people. And that's the conversation that we need to have.
But hold on. You mentioned a point, and I'm sure that Mr. Prudhomme wants to comment on this. And this is something that we've been talking about, because I think the point that he is making is that there is a divide now. You spoke about, you know, Lyndon Johnson. You read about Lyndon Johnson. You're not old enough to remember Lyndon.
I'm not old.
I remember when he died. Okay,
oh, yeah, they were part
but
of
I don't. I don't remember him as a presidential candidate, as a
Absolutely.
President, or any of that stuff. And so, what appears to be happening is that you may have some, more seasoned voters, as like that last caller who was talking about people, you know, dying, you know, for your
Absolutely.
For your right to vote. But are millennials really caring about that, or are they living in the here and now?
And like Mr. Mickey said, absolutely, people made a lot of sacrifices for our right to vote. But at the same time, we have to look at where we are now and with this generation, because we can't have the same conversation that we had 40, 50 years ago. Because this generation, as you know, this gentleman just said, Chris, correct?
Yeah, absolutely.
Chris, that with social media. Social media is a big thing. So we have to talk to them on different streams, on different mediums, and have that different conversation. Yes, we pay reverence to our seniors and the people who stood before us, our giants, the shoulders that we're standing on. However, we have to now shift that conversation, because the millennials, we call them with Black Girls Vote our sleeping giants. Once we motivate them and get them to the polls, then we can again mobilize as a community and organize and say, hey, this is what we want, and you have to listen to us.
And two things. One, you're absolutely right. One, I'll say this, and I'll go back to this in a second. Our generation is the first generation that you can say has pretty much not been through anything. Our parents, grandparents, the March of Selma, mm-hmm. Civil rights issues. So, frankly, they look at it like, they don't really understand. I don't really believe they understand the true importance, because it's always been there in front of them. So they don't look at it as like, oh, this is a fight for us. They just don't get it. And number two, people always talk about, oh, young people should do this, young people should do that. But here's the thing. We should hold accountable pop culture.
Absolutely.
All of these icons, all these people that talk all this mess constantly on social media. But again, and they're the ones that say, oh, don't vote, this and that. Look at Nick Cannon. Look at Puffle.
Now keep in mind, neither one of them said, do
Hold
not vote.
Vote.
They
vote.
Said, and this is a question that I asked, and I might as well bring it up
yep.
now. They
yep.
said, hold your vote until the black vote matters. And the question that I asked, and I'll put this to you now, matters to whom?
Right, right. Mm-hmm. And at what point will it's always going to be an issue. Just as example, we'll go back to the criminal justice reform. And you said something a couple minutes ago that made 10,000% sense to me. The reality is this. We have to stop just being voting, checking the box for a candidate. I think young people have to start understanding issues.
Mm-hmm.
If we don't begin to make this, I don't want to say a pop culture movement, but if we don't make politics or issues a mainstream cultural thing, they're just not going to get it. And the reality is that we don't emphasize it as a whole. We don't emphasize the importance of issues, so they don't get engaged in issues. The reason why people watch the NFL is because they have a favorite team. So if you don't understand healthcare, if you don't understand, you know, the economy, if you don't understand agriculture, all these different aspects, then you won't care about it at all. So you won't even have a candidate to root for from local all the way up to federal. Because there's no reason to.
202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Sue calling from Virginia. Thanks for calling, Sue. What's on your mind?
Hi there. Yeah, I'm driving, so I really try to keep my thoughts together. But I want to tell the millennials, I am an ex-teacher. And one thing that I see that we don't do and we have not done is we have not mentored our children as they grew up. They didn't know about the community or the county or the votes that brought these senators in, brought these congressmen in. And we need to understand that we have to mentor them to make them understand. Because all we've always known was about what? About the president. We never thought about city council. We never thought about, and the young people now, we've got, you guys got social media. Guess what? That is the most powerful thing that we have right now. And you guys have cornered the market on it. We must show America that the black millennials, black young millennials are powerful and that we have a voice.
Okay.
And that we're going to show our voice. Mm-hmm. And I want to say one other thing. I'm charging the Masons. I'm charging the Alphas, the Kappas, the Qs. I'm charging the Zetas. I'm charging the AKAs.
All of the fraternities and sororities. Yeah, yeah. There we go. And let me, and Sue, let me say this. But before I let you go, you know, as a member of fraternity Cap Alpha Psi, we do participate in voting registration. We do participate in forums. I have spoken at other forums that were hosted by some of the other sororities and fraternities. So yes, it is happening, you know, and I think that it is not just up to those organizations to put the word out, but it is also up to individuals to put their ears out and their brains out so that they can understand. Because, as you said earlier, Mr. Perdome, if you watch the NFL because you have a favorite team, well, Lord knows the NFL and its rules are considerably more complicated than voting for a dog catcher or president. But that's just my thought. Let me go back to the phone lines. Let's go to Chinko Denaka. I think I got that right. Chinko Denaka calling from Silver Spring. What's on your mind?
Yeah, two quickie questions. I know time is running out. My first one is you have to ask to be placed at an accessible voting machine for the blind. I wonder why that is. They don't automatically fit you at a voting machine for the blind. Second question is I'll be voting early, and I'm trying to get the vote out to many blind people as I can. I live in Silver Spring. How do I get the vote out to get people who have registered or have not registered to register and they have a disability? And I'm trying to get people.
Well, let me see if my panel here has a suggestion for those who have disabilities, because I would imagine that every state agency would have access to information for people who are disabled.
Well, I don't know specifically where you are in Silver Spring, but the Maryland State Board of Elections, I'm sure there's a number. I don't have the number handy, but you can call and reach out to and say, hey, I have a disability and this is, you know, I need help and assistance in, during Election Day with voting. But the resources are there. I know the state has provided resources for that.
Absolutely. And again, no matter what state you happen to be in, Maryland, Virginia, whether you're in the District of Columbia or anywhere else in this country, every state agency has access to resources for those with disabilities. I need to take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk to Brandy. We're going to talk to Omar. Lines are still open at 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. I vote, we vote, no vote. We'll be back in just a moment. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. During this final segment of I Vote, We Vote, No Vote, we're going to hear from surrogates and supporters for Democratic presidential nominee Hillary Clinton and Republican presidential nominee Donald Trump. But before we do that, we do want to hear from Reverend Lennox Yearwood, who has been gracious enough to come in. He is the president and CEO of the Hip Hop Caucus. Reverend Yearwood, I want to bring us back to some of the issues that we have discussed throughout this program. We're talking about millennials, young people, those who have made a decision, a conscious decision, not to vote. Have you encountered those kinds of individuals? What is their argument? What do you say to them?
I mean, yes. I mean, we've had that argument. It's amazing when it's always going to be back on my alma mater here at Howard. But I think that we've had that conversation, and there is some merit to the I can understand the frustration because when they're dealing with what they see from pollution to police reform to poverty. But the problem, though, is that what they need to understand is when we have our conversation is that demonstration without legislation leads to frustration. And so if you don't understand, if you don't shape policy, if we don't do what we need to do to get out the vote, no matter if you're Republican or Democrat, as an American, you have an obligation to make sure your voice is heard, and or you can't say anything. So for me, working with so many artists right now, from Amber Rose on Dancing with the Stars to Kiki Palmer to T.I. to Vic Mensa, all of these artists, we have conversations about what's wrong with the candidates, what's wrong with the process. But what we recognize that if you're not engaged in this process, then you are not in the process.
So but my question is, so what do they say to you when they say, I don't want to? Do they say my vote doesn't count? Do they say that they don't believe that the process is fair? Do they say that they don't believe that they can make an impact? What's their argument?
I mean, it's a layered argument. A lot of them came into this process very excited about working for either at the time, some of them working for Barack Obama in 2008, some of them working for Mitt Romney, some of them young people who were getting engaged, some of them where they were. When they came into the process in the They wanted change. They came in at that time seeing the effects of Hurricane Katrina, seeing the effects of Oscar Grant to Sean Bell. This is the equivalent to 2008. When you move forward, they continue to see a political process that is damaged. They are seeing partisanship. They are seeing gamemanship. They're seeing that on Capitol Hill and on the state and local level. What's also missing on a much more layered process is that they don't understand how the institutions work. Institutions from NAACP, Urban League, nothing wrong with them, but they don't understand how some of those institutions have had an impact on their lives. And so they're wondering, man, how does this whole thing work? Because all we see is politicians on the October 4th, the election, and we don't see any change. And so they have a valid argument when they see the things that are happening on the state house, on the local level, or on the federal government. But what's different here is that once they begin to understand how their voice matters, when they begin to understand that it's not just the top of the ticket, but the DA and the judge or the city council member and the mayor, when they begin to really look at all the pieces, and particularly those who are on college campuses, and they begin to see the political science of the process or how policy can be shaped, or more importantly, if they don't shape policy, how policy will shape them, then they want to get engaged. So I think that there's a key component that these young folks are seeing a system they want to change and want to be a part of.
Let me go to Omar calling from Silver Spring. Omar, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Thank you so much. The point that I want to make for all the millennials, every policy that the next president is going to be making is going to affect them, okay? And the problem is it's not just for the presidential, but down ballot, because the president can win, but he cannot pass any laws into the Congress and the Senate and approve that. So they have to get involved. You know, if they want student loan forgiveness, if they want jobs, these are things that Hillary talked about that Trump did not talk about. And if you just want to sit, you're going to have someone who's not have your best interests at all.
Okay. Thank you so much, Omar. Brandy calling from Northwest D.C. What's on your mind?
Hi. My comment is about the millennials. I just want to say, you know, I agree with your panel, but I feel that one thing that's not being said is just like that your gentleman said, it's once they understand, then they're all in. Well, to understand, you first have to ask how and why. And that's not what they're asking. Millennials, you're right. They're a very strong and powerful group. But the problem is, to me, they base their decisions on feelings. You know, when they're excited and it feels good, just like Barack Obama's message about hope, and it made them feel good. So yeah, they were all in. Yeah, they were giving their $5 and $10 online and $20. But they make their decisions based on the feelings. They don't want to know the history. When you say, if they understand, once they get it, yeah, but the issue is, how do they get it when they don't want to do the reading?
Okay. Thank you so much, Brandy. I appreciate it. As I mentioned earlier, I want to go now to our surrogates. We have representing the Clinton camp, Nicole Williams and Deanna Bass, who is a Trump supporter. Ladies, thank you so much for joining me. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
I want to start first with Deanna Bass. What's your best argument for people who aren't in love with your candidate, particularly when you're talking about the millennials?
Well, you know, I think that people should look at the 30-year history that Hillary Clinton has had in her political career.
Let's not talk about Hillary Clinton.
Okay.
I want to talk about your candidate. One of the things that we're hold up, stop.
Okay.
There we go. I want see. We're not going to do the debate thing where I ask about Donald Trump and somebody talks about Hillary Clinton. I want to hear about Donald Trump.
So I understand
go right ahead.
And what I should first say is that I obviously started off. Well, your listeners don't know this. I started off on the campaign of Dr. Ben Carson.
Okay.
So when he was no longer the nominee, I decided that I would support the nominee of the Republican Party. I volunteered on my first Republican campaign when I was 12 years old. So I am a Republican, and I understand how that might be odd in this. You know. Because I am an African American and I am a Republican, but my beliefs are not disconnected to my vote. So when I think about actually pulling the lever for Donald Trump, it is easy for me to do that because at the end of the day, he matches my beliefs more than Hillary Clinton does.
How so?
In terms of jobs and economics, I feel like he. And I know you say you this is your show, and I completely understand that you don't want me to talk about Hillary Clinton.
But she's going to talk about Hillary Clinton.
But I think what you need to understand, what we need to understand in this election cycle, there are many people like me who are voting for the candidate because of their displeasure with the opposition. And so, as much as I am supporting Donald Trump, but for me, I really am a never Hillary voter. And so there are many, many people out there who are like me. So as I sit here, yes, do I think that am I comfortable with Donald Trump's rhetoric? Am I comfortable with his language and his bravado and brashness? Absolutely not. But for me, and there are many voters like me, and you cannot silence this part of us. For many of us, in the same way that there are people who are never Trumpers, there are people who simply cannot support another reign of Clintons, and that is where I sit. So when I think of like I'm a small business owner and I'm an entrepreneur, and I think of solutions that can come from someone shaking the system up who has business experience. So that's why I lean towards Donald Trump. I think, you know, his language on immigration has been harsh and divisive. But he has brought up the issue of illegal immigration, and I think that's hugely important to me. He has not stood in line with me in some cases on social issues that I stand for, but he's far closer to my point of view than Hillary Clinton. So just
well, let me stop you there because I want to give Ms. Williams a chance to speak about Hillary Clinton. If there are people that do not like Hillary Clinton, there are people that don't want to see another Clinton presidency of any type. So what's your best argument for supporting a Hillary Clinton?
Right. So with Hillary Clinton, the thing that you hear most about is whether or not you can trust her. The issue that a lot of millennials has isn't necessarily related to her policies. And when you sit down and really look at her policies actually do resonate with where a lot of millennials are, especially as it relates to climate change, as it relates to college affordability and college student loans, as it relates to the economy and her jobs plan that she has put out on her website. And so while people say, you know, they may be a little leery because of her husband, I say you need to look at her policies. And it is her policies and it's her agenda that she puts forth that is the best choice for the American people out there. And it is what will push the
country
forward.
So here's the other piece, because you started off with a big issue, trust. You know, you know, a lot of women, a lot of men won't date somebody if they don't trust them. So why should they vote for somebody that they may have difficulty trusting?
Well, the reason people, quote unquote, don't trust Hillary has really nothing to do with Hillary. It has to do with kind of the scandals from back when her husband. back from when her husband was in the White House. Hillary has always been, you know, she's had her positions. She's always been able to clearly state what her positions are. And she is a known hard worker for the average everyday person, for children and women and family. And that has been her consistent track record for the last 30 years.
Go ahead, real quick. I've got 30 seconds
apiece. Okay, I say to the issue of trust, we do have 33,000 deleted emails, and when you talk about Bill Clinton's record, they were partners in the crime bill. They were partners in going down to Georgia and using black prisoners as props with Zell Miller and Sam Nunn. So they were partners in those things. And so people, millennials don't trust her. I think that you're absolutely right. She has made commitments to Bernie's supporters by talking about free college. How she plans to pay for that, I'm not really sure. You know, and she had, you know, today they had a great event with Al Gore on climate change. That resonates with millennials. But the bottom line is if she cannot pull together Obama's coalition and Bernie's coalition, she actually is in trouble. And those are millennials who do not trust her. And there's a reason for that. And
I'm going to have to let that be the last word. We could, you ladies could certainly, you know, talk about this for, you know, yet another, you know, half hour or even 60 minutes or so. But I certainly want to thank, you know, both of you for coming in, Dina Bass, also Nicole Williams, and also Reverend, thank you so much for coming in as well. I appreciate you, you know, making that yeoman's effort, you know, to bring it on home. So I want to thank certainly all of our listeners who were participating in this.